Yesterday I had a very interesting experience for me, and I think some of you would find it relevant too. And that was, I was being interviewed by Nishingananda, who flew over from L.A., who was interviewing me and Kirti Raj about what happened at the start of all of the Russian, Soviet Union, I suppose, Krishna conscious development in the mid-70s. And we were able to give our version of the history of what went on, which I think was very important, and it was a lot of fun, brought up a lot of fun memories, a lot of warm memories about everything that took place at that time. We realized that there were so many things to remember, so many experiences to share that we had together. It was a very, very memorable time for all of us. I suppose for those of you who were there in those beginning days in the Soviet Union, you remember that also with great pleasure, except for when there were, of course, persecutions and great difficulty given to everybody. That's, of course, not very pleasurable. But when there was the opportunity to speak about some of the fun times we had and some of the great experiences we had when trying to foil the KGB's constant attempts to give us difficulty, we realized that there were a lot of very fun things to talk about, I mean, even though we were totally crazy in those days. We spoke about all of the bringing in of books and the way the books were moving around and all these kind of things, which in and of themselves are just kind of fun. They reminded me of the fun part of life where there was a lot of action, a lot of spy versus spy, and somehow or another doing everything to bring to all you people over there a lot of interesting information which may have helped you in your lives at that time. And anyway, that's what I did yesterday, so I'm just sharing with you. I'm still in that mood of all of the austerities and yet all of the incomparable excitement that all of that brought, and all of the pain as well. So you always have in everything that happens in this world, you have something that's very exciting, something that's a great experience, something that's also exciting, but it brings a very painful experience. So you don't want to remember that as a positive thing. You see that as something which is to be overcome, something which is to be forgotten rapidly because it's so emotionally traumatic. But what is interesting is that within all of this good and bad, there is always experience which is helping us grow, always experiences which are helping us see things in a better way, seeing things in a clearer way. And I'd like to, in advance, also express my congratulations to Gora, because tomorrow's his birthday, so we can all say happy birthday today for Gora for tomorrow. Happy birthday, Gora. Actually, one half of the effort to put all this together, everything that was going on, also goes to Gora because he's putting so much effort into it. He works all day and then spends all night getting everything ready so that everybody can have all these facilities that we have. Yesterday when I was speaking about, with Kirti Raj, there were two of us were being interviewed together here, about the experiences we had, I concluded with the whole discussion how it wasn't organization, it wasn't management, it wasn't hierarchy, it wasn't leadership that made anything happen. Basically, it was individuals who were highly motivated. What really counts in life, what really counts in our endeavors to accomplish anything, are the individuals who work to accomplish something, are the individuals who make it happen. When one individual says, yes, I want to do this, and does something, it's a powerful force. Now, I don't want to live in the past and simply be concerned with what happened in the past and consider that the present has no value, not at all. But it is the foundation upon which everything now rests. And I was realizing as we were remembering what happened in those days, in the late 70s and early 80s, that we would make an endeavor, we would contact some individuals, but these individuals were very highly motivated and made everything happen in a very wonderful way. Those wonderful, dedicated souls in those days were just risking their lives, going to mental institutions, being tortured in various ways. But they were so motivated to accomplish something which they thought was very good for people that somehow they got through it quite well. But then I was thinking that, well, of course, Kirtiraj said it many times when Nisringananda asked us why we were doing this. He said, well, probably the main reason was that we were very young and quite foolish and didn't understand the risks or the consequences of what we were doing on ourselves. And I had to agree with that because, after all, when you're very young, you're very idealistic. And when you're very idealistic, you're very motivated to do something good that you feel fits within your ideals. And that's very good because idealism is actually what rules this world. Idealism is what makes things happen. Idealism is what gives us power. Idealism is what makes everything work. If it wasn't for idealism, the world would simply be a place where people were only interested in business and money and moving objects here and there and simply taking care of everything that's directly in front of them. And that's not very advantageous for people who need help, people who need inspiration, people who need more than just the ordinary aspects of life. Now, naturally, everybody needs the material facilities of life. That's, of course, the basic fundament upon which everybody's lives rest. But sometimes we need more. We need an inspiration. We need a reason to exist. We need a reason to do things. Otherwise, we lose our inspiration. We become lazy or we become dull to life. So motivation, being motivated, being inspired to act in a particular way is a very important part of life, especially when you're young. And we really shouldn't try to diminish the youthful idealism. We should nurture it, but try to guide it in a very good way. You can see it in a social context. You see, old people rather make everything never change. They keep everything the same. That's their whole business. Us old people, we like to keep everything the same all the time. We want to keep things steady. We want to keep things stable. We want to keep things secure. Whereas younger people are interested in expansion and change and transformation and idealistic ways to make things better. And whatever we might think about that idealism, factually, it presents a good balance. It offsets the stagnation which can set in when one becomes older by bringing some life into it, by bringing some transformative energy into it to adjust the course of the future. Now, when we are very young, we have this idealism. The reason we have this idealism is because it is our nature. It is our quality and characteristic as a soul to be idealistic, to want good. Now, naturally, I'm not saying that this is a universal principle, that every younger person is idealistic, every younger person wants good for everybody. I know, practically, to be realistic, there are persons who are just very unevolved, very primitive in their understanding, very selfish in their understanding, who are not interested in such things. But I don't want to talk about them because they are not very useful for our evolution right now. I think that the many people who have been engaged in activities of idealism, who are working hard to make this a reality, they remain young. And those who have no interest in idealistic activities, who are simply engaged in day-to-day functions, whatever they may be, however you may want to label them, they age faster. They become more jaded. They become more uninterested in the exciting evolutionary developments that can take place within them and others. But the nice thing about the existence is that periodically we are all forced back into our idealistic origins by natural catastrophes or social catastrophes or conflicts which bring us together for the common good. Now, how are these idealistic delineations according to time, as we are younger, as we grow older, how they change, how is this related to our spiritual development? I think that our spiritual development is very much connected with our idealism. You will find that it is the younger persons who are most idealistic, who are most ready to make sacrifices for the sake of spiritual evolution. They are ready to sacrifice. They are ready to do things which persons who are well-established, persons who are older and more interested in stability and not changing, would ever think of doing. It is my opinion that this idealistic concept, this idealism that a person may embrace, is what keeps us young in heart, keeps us young in spirit, and keeps us alive. There are some people who lose their idealism, who become callous, become hardened, become less interested in the sacrificing, and less interested in austerity, less interested in the hard work that idealism encourages. Now, the idealistic personalities, they are always ready to sacrifice, but the ones who are not so idealistic anymore, in the sense that they're more realistic, are always balancing the personal needs or the needs of their family or their extended family to the needs of the common good that an idealist is concentrating upon. Now, you might be thinking that I'm speaking badly, in a sense, about those kind of personalities, because I have stated that an idealist or a person who's a realist, not really an idealist anymore, is somehow less than an idealist because they are practical, because they are concentrating on the requirements of those around them. But it's not so. Actually, it is important for idealists to turn to realism, that because this realistic understanding will temper their idealism and will enable them to accomplish their goals even better. And that is an essential aspect of our existence, to temper the idealism with a very good dose of realism. Because when you can balance these two things, when you can temper your idealism, you will have a great power, because you'll be able to connect with people in a way which is important for them. The trick is to be a realistic idealist. Now, these two terms are not contradictory, not at all. Factually speaking, these two terms are perfectly complementary. They are complementary because what they are really saying is that if you want to have success in your life, if you really want to have a proper connection to the ideals that you really believe in, you have to understand the situation you're in and not be clouded by your rosy glasses, rose-colored filters, which make you think that everything will work according to your idealistic understanding. Now, this is a very important thing. This is a very essential thing. Because when this is taking place, when this idealism is tempered by this enormous desire to really connect with the goals of the idealism, one has to become very realistic to really accomplish his goals. One of the main faults, or one of the main difficulties that we have as idealistic people, and I'm saying that because every single person who is listening to this broadcast now, either live or recorded, is an idealistic person. Otherwise, you would not be listening, unless you want, of course, find some fault. That's another thing. But you would not be listening to this unless you were an idealistic person. This idealism is what drives us, even in our older age, because a lot of us are a lot older than we used to be in those days. This drives us to find out the ways of spirituality which are relevant to us as people, relevant to others as people. We no longer feel that just simply blanket shotgun spirituality, one process fits all, works. So it is essential for us as people, as individuals, or those who are trying to accomplish something, to see the parameters of the situation within which we are trying to do good. Okay, you may be wondering, what is he talking about anyway? I mean, we kind of understand this. It's kind of common sense. We kind of got this together. Well, actually, there is an important point I'm trying to make here, and I'm going to bring it up now. Idealistic people have the capacity to be very seriously hurt and traumatized in their idealism. They become seriously damaged when they have a very, shall we say, illusory idealism. An idealism which simply thinks what I'm doing is right, what I believe in is right, what I'm following is right, it's absolutely perfect, it's absolutely wonderful. And the reason this gives difficulty is because almost always, at one point, those who they are working with or the situation within which they work changes in a way which destroys that illusion. All of a sudden they understand, wait a minute, we're dealing with real people here. We're dealing with real situations here. And they are not up to the standard of my absolute and idealistic illusory ideals. And so they become very disappointed, very disturbed, very agitated, start living in the past because they cannot get past the fact that they feel cheated. They feel cheated because they say, I was supposed to be living this idealistic life and now I'm not because you did something wrong or some organization did something wrong or some people did something wrong. Therefore, you're responsible for my pain and I'm going to just simply sit on this until something is done about it. So such people live in the past and cannot move to the future. And when you tell such a person, I'm trying to do something good, they say, yeah, yes, but you didn't do something good in the past, therefore you can never do something good. I've heard this said about me. I'm sure many of you have heard this said about you in other ways, but in a similar way. One can really understand where the Christian concept of eternal damnation in hell came from. It's something which people very nicely like to accept, that you did something wrong, you should be condemned forever in hell. It's something we people feel very comfortable with. We feel comfortable with it because that's the way we feel about ourselves. We feel we have very high standards, we should do things very properly, and if we don't, we condemn ourselves. And we continually condemn ourselves for this throughout our whole lives. You find this concept of hell in all the major religions. You'll find it even a major portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the Hindu religion. You'll find hell, punishment, condemnation, judgment. These things, we have drawn them to ourselves because when something happens in the past, that we take that as a definition of the future or defining factor of the future. And the reason this is difficult to deal with is because it is a fact that today, right now, any event that is taking place is based upon, is a product of all that has taken place in the past. And all of these events and all of these things which have taken place in the past, these things are so intertwined with us as people, intertwined with us as individuals who have been struggling, who have been working, who have been trying to make each moment the best moment and have not necessarily been succeeding in all respects. We always feel that we're doing the best possible thing we can do at every moment. Therefore, when we do things, we're doing things that we know we have to do. We may not always feel it was right at the time, but we feel sometimes we have no choice. And it's very interesting how law, the process of law, takes into account all of that. The process of law takes into account the motivation of people, the history of people, the behavioral modification of people, which caused them to enter into a situation that they entered into. Everything is examined. Why a person did what he did, because of his upbringing, perhaps of his family, perhaps of his motivation, the way in which he was feeling very frustrated, the way he was being disturbed or tricked or agitated or pushed. All of these factors are important for establishing motivation in a crime. This motivation, this idealism, these things are related, because an idealistic person is motivated to manifest their idealism. Now, I am a very idealistic person. I mean, you already knew that. That's no great revelation. But in this discussion, I'd like to use me as an example. I'm a very motivated, idealistic person. I really want to do things that help people. Yet at the same time, I am a very realistic person. At least I think I am. I mean, you may think differently, but I feel very realistic in, according to my conception, that what I'm trying to do, I try to do something that even us older folks, even us who are interested in stability, even us who are not interested in acting carelessly out of idealism, would find benefit in. And I think, to a certain extent anyway, I have been fairly successful in balancing idealism and realism for trying to do something progressive. And therefore, I personally have experienced that there's no conflict between idealism and realism. Realism can temper idealism. It can give us the direction by which our idealistic goals can be manifested. Let's use this understanding to enter into an event that takes place where something negative happens, where a person does something negative. Now, if my goal as a assistant to help others and to evolve would be that they do something beneficial for their evolution, it is not beneficial for my goal or for the sake of others to harp upon the negative events, but rather to encourage the positive. Let's say you do something which ordinarily would be condemned or would even consider as horrible. Now, if the goal actually is to bring you to a higher level of evolution, or to have you experience that which you need to get to that higher level, it does not serve that goal in any way. It does not serve idealism, right, for me or anyone else to condemn, judge, or restrict you for that negative action. Now, I'm not talking about a crime in society, not at all. I'm speaking about those crimes, quote unquote, which spiritualists may feel are very serious and need to be punished within a spiritual way of acting. For example, that's why principles are there. If you break the principle, then that is a condemnation upon you. Some people, even people who are favorable, say, why don't you make more standards? Why don't you make more discipline? Because discipline is good. Other people say, he doesn't believe in any principles. Everybody can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter at all. As far as my idealism sees its manifestation in a reality of people, I see it like this, that I give tools by which you can evolve. You decide how that interfaces with your own idealism and how you wish to manifest yourself in daily action. I don't promote and I don't condemn any particular actions that you do within that context. But we ourselves have our own internal condemnation facility which condemns us within when we do things which are not up to our highest expectations. We don't need to be condemned from outside because we've already done it within. Now, I've given some tools by which we can deal with the past. For example, that meditation where you X out events which were negative in your past, where you forgive yourself, where you come to feel your energy and understand where certain aspects of your personality are inspired or where they are distorted. These things are there to help everybody come over their past and create a positive future. It is my idealism which is saying, I believe in you. I believe you can find the best things for you in your life with a little help from friends. Yet I find this very realistic because everything depends upon you, which is the way it is anyway. Even if you were to surrender to someone else and follow everything they said, it's you who say you're going to do that. It's you who agree to place yourself under the subjugation of another. So you are the most important person in this relation. It's that contract which was created. But I very much like that all of us make a contract with ourselves that we will maintain our idealism because it gives us youth, it gives us energy, it gives us strength, it gives us capacity to exist. We will maintain that idealism, yet we will temper it with reality. We will see reality. We will be aware of reality. We will work within reality. The reality is that we are not perfect. We should not expect perfection anywhere around us. We just should expect it to be what it is, and our responsibility to ourselves is to be aware of what is and accept it for what is, because it is the most practical, realistic way to be. And along with this very practical, very clear, and very aware understanding, our idealism will drive our development. It will motivate our development, our advancement, our evolution. It will motivate us to do things which are favorable for our spiritual essence, our spiritual being, to feel compatible, to feel happy with it. Every event that takes place, as we were speaking before, is a product of everything that has taken place in our evolution throughout the entirety of time, and our present awareness and motivation to act at the present moment. So what is our motivation? Our motivation is, naturally, to do the best we can. What is our awareness? Our awareness is, naturally, it should be, awareness of everything that has led us to this present moment in time, which is the start of the rest of our lives, to be aware of all the events, to be aware of the pressures, to be aware of the forces which have molded us, the decisions we have made which have molded us. It's a combination of these two things. It is important for everybody, but very important for all idealists, to be aware of these two simultaneous situations or circumstances which meet at the present moment. The past has really only value in the way in which it meets the present moment. The future only has value in as much as it meets the present moment. In the present moment, you will find the accumulation of the past and the potential of the future meeting. To dwell on the past and say, this is what was then, this is the way it was, and to mull it over, think about it, condemn it, judge it, turn it around in a different way, adjust history in 10 million ways. It's simply a waste of time. In reality, all that counts is the way in which the past meets the future at the present moment, which is all that really exists. Now, of course, that can be expanded according to our consciousness, but this moment right now is all that really exists, all that reality is. Whereas our idealism can be captured by the failures of the past and our desires for the future. Do you understand that? That's very important. How idealism, this wonderful thing, this wonderful child of our consciousness, can be captured by the past or derailed by the illusion of the future. Whereas right now, the present, the reality, the realism of the present gives us awareness of the circumstances of the past, of the fact that they happened because there was a reason for them to happen. And the future we see in our realistic understanding is a untapped potential that can only be tapped by the way we act now. Now, the negative possibility of realism is that somebody is simply very solidly situated on earth and is just living a very stable, earthly, earthbound, static existence, or an existence which is very naturist or I'm having trouble with this because you understand why, because just simply being totally aware of what is now is also very advanced, but rather it can limit one simply to the reality of what's in front of us. That's the negative possibility. Whereas idealism, the negativity of it could be that you could live in a hole or you can live in heaven. It's so amusing. If you live in a hole, you are just living here in the past, the pit of the faults of the past because of not fulfilling the idealistic illusion, which is the heaven, the illusion of the perfect idealistic situation, that heaven. You've got these two pitfalls, the heaven and the hole. I don't want to call it a hell. It can be a hell, but the heaven and the hole. But the perfect combination of the two is the lifts one off of this mundane platform and encourages. Now, that which is not bound by the past and that which is not bewildered by the future is that which can give right now, in the present moment, the clearest direction in life. In other words, idealism needs direction. That's what motivation is there for, to motivate us in the proper direction. And clarity is essential for that, clarity. I just wanted to share that with you because this was my basic realization in speaking yesterday with Nishingananda about this, what the events of the history of the development of the Soviet expansion of the spirituality that we had a part to play in, because even though there were so many creations from this later on, buildings and facilities and so on, they didn't really have value. And even now you can see how that is not very significant, how it crumbles in different ways, how it causes agitation in different ways, these products of such a creation. But it's most important, the individuals, because these individuals who know how to balance, who know how to integrate their idealism in a realistic way, can actually be of great service to humanity. Now, don't get me wrong, to have a proper ambience or atmosphere or environment within which to develop oneself is essential, because the place is as important as any other aspect of an event. What to speak of a place that is the home and residence of these wonderful deities that we have. So balancing all aspects of our lives is an essential factor, and I'm just trying to, in this lecture, get us to embrace our responsibility as motivated idealists to embrace our responsibility, to embrace realism, to temper and polish and create a wonderful future.